Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. I'd like to welcome back my guest today, Dr. Phil Boyle. He is a general practitioner with a special interest in infertility, miscarriage and women's health. He's the founder and director of Neo Fertility Clinic in Dublin, Ireland. And today we're going to be talking about infertility and miscarriage. Thank you for joining us today, Phil.
You're very welcome, Linda. Thank you for inviting me.
So could you explain what happens when a couple come to you who've been trying to have a baby and have been unsuccessful?
Sure. So the approach that I take in my practice, it's part of what we call restorative reproductive medicine. And our thinking is that if there's a fertility problem, there has to be a reason for it. And from a clinical point of view, we find too many people do IVF too quickly. And if you've blocked fallopian tubes, both tubes are blocked, then that's probably the best reason for considering IVF. But that's a very small number of those presenting with difficulty conceiving. And one of the things that we pick up on from our multifactorial treatment strategy is that they have what I refer to as clinical endorphin deficiency. So this is something that evolved in my practice gradually over time. And it started with the first person that I prescribed low-dose naltrexone for about 15 years ago. So I had come across the concept of low-dose naltrexone as an immune-modifying treatment that clinically worked well for a number of people with autoimmune conditions such as MS or rheumatoid arthritis, or even Crohn's or inflammatory bowel. So I was quite fascinated by that, and most of the work that I do is fertility treatment. But I decided if I find a patient who has an autoimmune condition as well as their infertility, I'd very much like to see how they get on if we put them on low-dose naltrexone. And it wasn't long, a couple of months after getting the idea or discovering the idea of low-dose naltrexone, I had a patient who developed new-onset acute rheumatoid arthritis with inflamed, painful, swollen joints, and she wasn't responding to relatively simple anti-inflammatories, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And the direction from her rheumatologist was she needed methotrexate. Now, methotrexate can help, but it's immunosuppressive. It takes out the immune system. And the other problem is you can't get pregnant while taking it. So because her first priority was pregnancy and she really wanted to get pregnant, I suggested to her, well, there is an alternative treatment. It is licensed, but it's licensed for something completely different. And we're looking at an off-label use at a real low dose of this licensed drug. But for your indication, it's experimental because we don't have big published data. We have some clinical experience from patients in the United States that seems to be positive. So I informed her of the status of low-dose naltrexone for her condition. So having discussed it with her husband, thought about it for a while, they came back and said, you know what, let's try it and see how we get on. And her response was remarkable. Now, not everybody responds as well, because I have had non-responders, especially with rheumatoid arthritis over the years, but she was a responder, which we'd see about 70% of the time. And pain, inflammation, swelling, everything improved. She also said that her brain fog lifted. and she noticed her premenstrual symptoms were gone. So within 2 months of starting the low-dose naltrexone treatment, she was pregnant. And it didn't occur to me at the time that naltrexone had such an important role to play for her getting pregnant, as well as controlling her autoimmune condition. But it turns out if you have a fertility problem, that if you have any chronic ill health condition, that's going to make it harder to get pregnant. And there's a number of chronic ill health conditions that could be at play, and they're not always clinically obvious, such as an acute flare-up of rheumatoid arthritis. So it took me a little while to connect the dots, because gradually the next person with an autoimmune condition and the next. So gradually, maybe about just a handful of patients over 6 or 8 months, I would have recommended the naltrexone, and the majority I would see improvements. And also pregnancies following with that. And eventually I connected the dots and said, hang on a second, these women presenting with an autoimmune condition, when I put them on the naltrexone, they tell me, you know what, I used to have a really low mood and now my mood is better. I used to be very anxious. My anxiety is gone. I had sleep disturbance. I had persistent fatigue, brain fog, painful periods, PMS. So eventually I said, well, if somebody presents with these symptoms, even if they don't have an autoimmune condition, I wonder how they would get on if I tried them on low-dose naltrexone. So that's where I departed from having a clearly diagnosed autoimmune condition to trying it for what I was observing clinically in front of me. And because my thinking would be, if you're feeling unwell, then your health isn't as good as it could be, and your fertility would be impaired because of that. So clinically, I started to, and that's what I call now clinical endorphin deficiency. So if somebody presents with their PMS, their painful periods, low mood, fatigue, sleep disturbance, and so on, that I go, you're clinically endorphin deficient. And I ask these questions routinely. We have a questionnaire that everybody just ticks the boxes to say, number one, do they have these complaints? And number two, how bad do they rate it out of 10? And it's very interesting. So of all the couples that who present to me on day one with a fertility issue, some are in and around 50% will have symptoms consistent with low endorphins. And straight away from our first consultation, I would recommend treatment with low-dose naltrexone. And again, 7 or 8 times out of 10, when they come back for their review appointment 2 or 3 months later, the significant majority would report an improvement in these negative symptoms. And this is a preparation step before we engage in the hormone balancing or surgical assessment or male treatment or whatever else may be needed. But it's a very, very important step. And as a treatment strategy overall, from what I've observed clinically, we get more pregnancies and fewer miscarriages. So it's a way of practicing medicine that isn't commonly done, because it's looking more at what you see clinically and looking at symptoms and understanding physiological principles and applying it in an unknown area, and so to speak, in an experimental way. But so long as I inform my patients that I'm doing something that's new for you, it's off-label use, and I give them the information about it, many of them are really happy to try something that's new, especially if it fits under the umbrella of, well, it won't do any harm. There are a small number who would get persistent side effects such as vivid dreams, sleep disturbance, or a few other minor side effects, and they just don't like how it makes them feel. And in that case, I'd say, look, you're just not suited to it. Either we drop the dose to a lower dose, or we stop the medication altogether. So while it's a wonderful treatment for many people, there are some that it's the wrong treatment to give. And also, if somebody presents and they don't have symptoms of endorphin deficiency, and I put them on low-dose naltrexone, then they tend to get much more of the side effects, and it's not going to help our overall outcome. So I try to target it to those it seems to be clinically relevant for. And interestingly, one of the root mechanisms behind it would be that while we get relief of the symptoms through endorphin stimulation by taking low-dose naltrexone, that ultimately this has an immune-modifying anti-inflammatory effect that may be a strong contributor to why we're getting either infertility or miscarriage. And our overall strategy is we want you to feel good, we document your fertility pattern with our app, with the Neo Fertility app. So they document their fertility pattern. And by the pattern, that the app allows us to record those symptoms that are there as well, and also record the medications that are taken. But it's a useful guide to me to let me know how things are going and have we achieved a balanced, healthy environment to allow them to conceive. I thought when I started out prescribing low-dose naltrexone 15 years ago, I thought, well, this is easy. This should catch on because the response can be so dramatic and so positive for so many women that it's clinically really satisfying for the doctor to provide the treatment and for the patient to receive relief. But it's been remarkable to me how slow it is for medical thinking to change, because that first patient that I mentioned excitedly returned to her rheumatologist who had recommended methotrexate and avoiding getting pregnant. And he was hostile and did not like it one bit. And a lot of the time, naltrexone is put into this placebo category and say, look, you just believed it was going to work, so it did, and that's going to happen 30% of the time. It's rubbish. There's no publications. And as physicians, we can develop this tunnel vision and be dismissive because where's the data and where are the publications? Now, there are a growing number of good publications that we could talk about a little bit later for autoimmune conditions. But certainly years ago, those studies weren't available. But we could see clinically what was happening in front of us. And the point I would make is, well, if it seems to be helping the patient, try it again and try it again. And placebo will work about 30% of the time. And if we're seeing a response rate of about 70%, well, just from what you'd observe clinically, you have a good idea this is over and above placebo. And also, I would find then sometimes a patient would forget to take the naltrexone for whatever reason. And then they notice, oh, the PMS is back, the painful periods are back. And within a couple of months, they're right back to where they were. And we kind of go, we really need to get back to that naltrexone. So that's often referred to as an N of one trial, where you have a specific intervention. You look at the positive impact. So the intervention is naltrexone. You observe the improvement in symptoms. You withdraw the naltrexone, and then the symptoms come back. You reintroduce the naltrexone, and the symptoms go again. So that's often referred to as N of one trial, which means that you got one patient, and for that patient, that's really helping. And any doctor can do that and observe for themselves. And the only caution I'd say is, well, there will be occasional non-responders. So try it for a few, but the majority do respond positively to it. The conditions, especially endometriosis, then would be a gynecological condition that responds very well to low-dose naltrexone because of its benefits for reducing inflammation and period pain and PMS, but ultimately for reducing inflammation to improve pregnancy. Another condition is polycystic ovary that tends to respond very well most of the time with low-dose naltrexone. So it's such a key component of the fertility treatment I provide at this point. I would really suffer without having the ability to recommend low-dose naltrexone to my patients. And where we are in the world of fertility treatment currently, we're at risk of what I describe as like a straitjacket, where more and more regulations are coming in. There's more and more concern about litigation and more restrictive constraints put on doctors to prevent us from trying new things like this. But I think it's critically important for the profession of medicine that we can treat what we see in front of us clinically using physiological basis and deductive reasoning, and then observe what we see clinically, even in advance of very strong, solid, published clinical trials, provided we've got a reasonable degree of safety, knowing that it's safe. And if you're using a drug that's already licensed, well, and it's been proven safe at a much higher dose, then you're on safe territory. But even with that, there's just that reluctance to try new things because we're not trained that way as doctors. We're trained to follow the book, stick with the instructions, and to try and do new things isn't very widely practiced as due to our physician training, I believe. But there's another area that really challenged me then, because it's one thing giving naltrexone to help a couple get pregnant in the first place, but it's quite another thing then to continue naltrexone throughout the pregnancy. And those that had very strong clinical endorphin deficiency with very strong symptoms of PMS and fatigue and low mood and all the rest, that if they became pregnant and I stopped the naltrexone, many of those would end up having a miscarriage. And obviously upsetting to them, disturbing to me, and this idea, well, we have this general rule of thumb because of things like thalidomide and stilbestrol, which caused horrible consequences for moms and babies in the past, that if you're giving medications in pregnancy, you can get very unpleasant, very unwanted side effects, even if your intention is to do good, and you need to be careful. So every doc is very aware and familiar of that. But I kept observing these women feeling awful, losing their pregnancies, and saying, what about continuing naltrexone in pregnancy? Because it primarily binds with the endorphin receptors. And one of the key mechanisms of action, even though the mechanism is quite complex, one of the key things is you get a threefold surge in endorphin levels through a temporary blockade of endorphin receptors. And this threefold surge of the endorphins then has a cascade of immune modifying effects that are beneficial. So it's not ultimately the naltrexone at the low dose that is specifically beneficial, but it's the impact it has on causing your body to increase endorphin levels, and your body then starts to work more like it should. And because it's taken at such a low dose, now there have been, at the high dose of 50 milligrams, there are publications of women using the high dose naltrexone because they're opioid dependent and they need to stay on naltrexone throughout pregnancy. And more data was coming in that direction that this is safe. And a fertility doctor who's a friend of mine in the United States, Dr. Thomas Hilders, was using these high doses safely in pregnancy from his clinical experience. So when I suggested to him I wanted to use 3 or 4 milligrams, he just laughed and said, I've used 100 milligrams and I've never seen a problem and I've been doing it for years. He's nothing published on it, but very good, interesting clinical experience. So because of the concern of pregnancy losses and from searching around as best I can, I figured, you know what, this is worth doing. Let's try naltrexone during pregnancy. And time and time again, we got better outcomes. And I'm at the point where I think if women have unchecked persistent inflammation throughout pregnancy, there are things called epigenetic changes that can occur to the baby, to the developing fetus. And this is where you get a negative impact on what they call methylation around the genes. So the genetic code, the DNA, is the same, but the expression of the genetic code is altered by methylation. So this is a fascinating area of medicine, and it's called epigenetics. And my suspicion is that epigenetic changes will be harmful. Epigenetic changes have the potential to be positively influenced by continuing naltrexone during pregnancy. And I would hypothesize boldly, because you've got to get a little creative, why not? Is it possible that maybe if we continued low-dose naltrexone throughout pregnancy and the woman is having a girl, is it possible that the female, when she grows up, will be less likely to express endometriosis if she's reduced the inflammation and epigenetic changes by taking naltrexone during pregnancy? To my mind, it would make sense that possibility exists, it's a very exciting possible benefit. Another interesting one is it may even have an impact on reducing the risk of autism, because there's an autoimmune inflammatory component that if mom has inflammation and an autoimmune condition herself, then her children are more likely to have autism, and we may be able to introduce a protective effect from that. So, for example, if a woman already has a child with autism and she'd really like to have another child, well, what steps could we recommend to her that we know are safe and may give a better outcome for the next pregnancy? So these vistas, again, through, I suppose, physiological deductive reasoning and a bit of creative thinking, but always under the umbrella of first do no harm, are developing as we explore naltrexone further. I do have a presentation that I gave for the previously for the low-dose naltrexone group as well, about giving naltrexone during pregnancy, where I compared 120 women who took naltrexone to, I think, 117 who didn't take naltrexone to try and compare outcomes. The difficulty of that particular group of drawing a comparison is it's those that are clinically endorphin deficient who really, really need it. And you need to stop naltrexone or not introduce it at all in the clinically endorphin deficient to observe just how beneficial naltrexone is for that subgroup. And that was hard to discern because everybody, I think, that needs it, I'm always encouraging them to take it, and the majority tend to. So a control group would need to be those with clinical endorphin deficiency who aren't treated to be able to observe strongly the beneficial effect. There were some non-statistically significant benefits from the naltrexone, and maybe a larger study group would have showed statistical significance. But at least I was satisfied from that relatively small number that it doesn't cause harm. But to be definitive, you'd need to have 10,000 users of naltrexone closely studied before you could outrule that there may be some other adverse effects that we're not aware of. So you cannot give the cast iron absolute definitive that it's definitely better. But I know from what I've seen clinically, a number of these babies just wouldn't be here if I stopped the naltrexone. We'd have our miscarriages. And pregnancy losses. So I'm satisfied that in the absence of the big data of 10,000 plus users, my deductive reasoning would lead me to, I think it's good to take this, and I think it's wise and reasonable to recommend.
We have many young ladies who ask, you know, is LDN safe during pregnancy? And I can understand that. Why would you want to take something you think might harm your baby? But, I mean, you, from your experience, have you ever found anything detrimental by taking LDN during pregnancy?
Well, here's one of the appealing things with autoimmune conditions during pregnancy, that you get an immunosuppressive effect from high levels of progesterone during the pregnancy. And many inflammatory autoimmune conditions will commonly improve as a result of high progesterone during pregnancy. So a lot of doctors will say there's no need to go for any additional immune-modifying treatment such as naltrexone. Now, the high levels are especially in the last trimester, but it's certainly in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, I think it's real important because the progesterone levels aren't really that high at that stage. So, but in terms of harm, no, I've never seen any harm from taking the low-dose naltrexone. In fact, I see the opposite. So when I see couples coming back and they want to try for another pregnancy, they often have their little, their first baby with them, and they say, this guy's great, good mood, sleeps well, eats well, he's getting all his developmental milestones, and he's just a healthy child. And that's what I would most commonly see. So having experienced couples coming back with their baby who's been on the naltrexone, that also boosts my confidence.
Mm-hmm. And what about during breastfeeding?
There'd be no reason why it should be problematic during breastfeeding. About 10% of any medication that is taken will be found in the breast milk. But we're using less than one-tenth of the licensed dose of naltrexone at a really low dose at night. So they're getting one-hundredth of the licensed dose. So with the amount of naltrexone the baby would get, it's very small. And even if baby is getting a bit of naltrexone, it may have a knock-on effect to boost their endorphins a little bit. But I'd be very confident it wouldn't do any harm.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, you talked about polycystic ovaries there. For people that don't know what that is, could you just give us an explanation, please?
Yeah, so polycystic ovaries, I think, they're misnamed. They should be called polyfollicle ovaries because there are many little follicles within the ovary, and the ovary often becomes full of fluid because of these follicles and enlarged and distended. And you can have mild, moderate, or severe polycystic ovaries, and it feels like a very severe diagnosis. But actually, it's, if you had to pick one, that's the one you would pick because the fertility outcomes are better with that than nearly anything else. In the more severe form of it, it causes insulin resistance, so that you put on weight very easily and you struggle to lose weight. And we'd commonly give a diabetic tablet, such as metformin, to try and help as well. But interestingly, naltrexone has a positive effect on regulating blood sugar levels as well. So I don't have big data to compare, but I do. There was an identical twin, twin sisters. I was treating one. The other twin was going somewhere else. The twin A, if we want to call her, was coming to my practice, was on naltrexone for her entire pregnancy, had a normal weight baby, full term, everything went fine. Her sister developed gestational diabetes, and she needed insulin injections. The baby was very large, and she ended up having a C-section. So now they both have a live birth, and they both had a successful pregnancy, but one was certainly much better than the other. So the glucose-regulating effects of the naltrexone complemented by the diabetic tablet. And again, I tend to use two things like that, and her sister was on neither of those, but it was a bit of both that actually helped to improve the outcome in her case.
Well, I have to say, we've run out of time. I think we could actually do a third show. We'll have to have you back later in the year. It's so interesting hearing you talk. You talk with such passion. So that's amazing. Okay, well.
Thank you, Linda.
Good luck with everything, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Perfect. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.